Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hey there, if you're listening to this and you support us on Patreon, you can hear it via the Patreon page ad-free.
So now, ladies and gentlemen, it is start time. Are you ready for start time?
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and this week we revisit our classic album dissection of De La Soul's debut, 3 Feet High and Rising. I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Kot. But first, we pay tribute to the late De La Soul rapper, Trugoy the Dub.
You know, Greg, we're going back to this classic album dissection for one reason, which is cause for joy and celebration. De La Soul's music is finally streaming. And another, we lost Trugoy the Dub.
Yeah, age 54. I mean, what a shame.
Young man.
Unbelievable. David Joliker, otherwise known as Trugoy the Dub, was one of the founding members, one of the three founding members of De La Soul, and was a key member of the group. He died knowing that the group's albums were finally going to be available on streaming services for the first time in March. But at the same time, you know, his legacy is so extensive. He's all over those records. When I think about De La Soul, I think about the dialogue that Trugoy had with Pastanus. You know, those two MCs were so incredibly important to that group. Pastanus was considered one of the greatest MCs of all time. I mean, he's certainly a master craftsman, and his wording was so precise. He was such a powerful presence in that group. But I think Trugoy added an element of, you know, spontaneity and freeness.
Yeah.
You know, he was kind of the wild card in the group. You know, his rhymes were always a little bit off center, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And in a good way. And you can hear it so profoundly on the first single that they released, Plug Tunin, in 1988. They remade it for 3 Feet High and Rising. They added some different colors to it and some different lines. But basically, the template was set with Plug Tunin. And I want to isolate a few lines from Plug Tunin that Trugoy does.
And I just got to insert that they're doing this while they're high school students in Amityville, Long Island. Amityville, home of the horror, right? They were kids.
Absolutely. And how, you know, Trugoy, I mean, these kids, not only influenced by the hip-hop that was around them, they obviously loved it, but beat poetry, you know?
Yeah.
And the avant-garde abstraction of these guys. I mean, I would have loved to have been hanging out with these guys in high school, because there must have been some wild conversations. So in Plug Tunin, here's what Trugoy is saying. Dazed at the sight of a method.
Dive beneath the depth of a never-ending verse. Gasping and swallowing every last letter. Vocalized liquid holds the quench of your thirst.
And you're going, it's beat poetry.
And you're going, what the hell, right? You know, it's just so wild. It's just blowing your mind. And, you know, I interviewed Trugoy once, and I said, what do you, you know, this was pretty sophisticated, abstract kind of lyrics for a kid.
Yeah.
And he goes, that's the way we talk, man. That's the way we thought. And he said, one of the things we tried to accomplish right away is we didn't want to spell it out. We didn't want to tell people exactly what we meant. We wanted them to want more. What does he mean? Why is he saying it this way? And I said, that's not exactly the way to get on the radio. I said, we didn't care about making radio hits. We wanted these heads. We wanted the hip-hop heads, the kids who were really into the art form, to dig into these records and play them over and over again to understand them. And it was a huge influence. It's kind of freed hip-hop from, like, you had to be, it was almost starting to codify. It's got to be hard, it's got to be street, and it's got to be direct, you know? And these guys were abstract and weird and
psychedelic.
They freed up a whole other avenue for hip-hop artists, you know? So it was really key. True Guy was kind of that free spirit. And then when you think about the debut album, True Guy, again, a tremendous presence on that record. When you think about the classic on that record, Me, Myself, and I, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody's talking about that was the record that got them noticed. It was a huge hit by the standards of De La Soul.
When it comes to being De La, it's just me, myself, and I.
But, you know, they got saddled with this idea of they're hippies, right?
Yeah.
And True Guy's gone, even from the start then, he was like, no, that's not what this is about. We don't want to be hippies. We don't like hippies. We don't care. We don't want to be that. But the line in that song that always stood out to me right from the start, mirror, mirror on the wall, tell me, mirror, what is wrong? Can it be my De La clothes or is it just my De La song?
Mirror, mirror on the wall, tell me, mirror, what is wrong? Can it be my De La clothes or is it just my De La song?
And, you know, the whole idea is the only thing that matters is I want to be myself.
Individualism.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want anybody telling me who I am or what I should be.
Mm-hmm.
I'm this person. I'm gonna celebrate it. And you know how liberating that was for like A Tribe Called Quest, Diggable Planets. Mm-hmm. Common told me how many times he would listen to that record and go, "You can just do this. You can just be yourself.
Right.
You don't have to
Electric
be like these
Circus
other guys."
Doesn't happen without De La Soul. And I would say early Kanye West doesn't happen without De La Soul.
Kanye said the same thing, and I know people are going to say, "Well, we hate Kanye West." Listen to those first Kanye records. Nobody else was rapping about the kind of things he did. He was rapping about working at a retail store, you know?
Those records stand.
I can be a nerd, and it's okay. De La gave me a license to do that.
Not for nothing do I have those daisies from the Daisy Age up and down my arm interspersing in my tattoos. It's a classic album, and what they did was really, really important to hip-hop. It's a shame that often they were dismissed as not one of the all-time greats because they were so different. I think they were one of the all-time greats because they were so different.
Absolutely. So rest in peace, True Guy, age 54. We miss you, but the music is going to live on for a very long time. When we return, we'll do our classic album dissection of De La Soul's innovative debut, 3 Feet High and Rising, on Sound Opinions. Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island's been brewing beers in the spirit of Chicago.
You can find IPAs, lemonade, shandy, and limited releases in-store or at one of Goose's venues in Chicago. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer. Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island has been brewing award-winning beers in Chicago that are inspired by this city. Take 312 Lemonade Shandy, Tropical Beer Hug Double IPA, and a rotating series of hazy IPAs only available in Chicago. You know, every time we go down to Goose Island, there's another one that they're pushing on us.
That's right.
They're all good.
Absolutely. And what supporters of musical culture, you know, in the city of Chicago and elsewhere, if you go to a show in Chicago and you see that Goose Island sign, you know when you're in good hands. They're music fans as well as great beer makers at Goose Island, so we're really proud to be associated with them.
The Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer. And we are back. This week, we are revisiting our classic album dissection of De La Soul's groundbreaking 1989 debut, 3 Feet High and Rising. You know, Greg, this is an album that has been at the center of industry conflict for decades over its innovative use of samples. you know, I've read six stories about why De La Soul was not available to stream on any of the services, and none of them completely make sense to me. There was a lot of animosity between them and their record label, Tommy Boy. Tommy Boy at one point wanted to stream everything on terms that were so egregious, even by streaming standards, De La Soul said no. At another point, De La dropped for an entire day their catalog for free. Take it. Mm-hmm. You know, we're frustrated that this isn't out there. There's a great quote that they had told Rolling Stone. You know, we're in the Library of Congress, but we can't even get our music on iTunes. And it was a shame. How it was finally resolved, why it took so long. Really, on the short list of incredible music that is not on any service, De La Soul was at the top of it for a long time.
One thing we should note, Jim, is that streaming versions of these albums aren't precisely like the original recordings because some of the samples still could not be cleared. What do we mean by clearing a sample? You got to pay for it.
Right.
And whoever owns the publishing for that little sample bit that you're trying to use as a part of this recording, I can name whatever price they want. And it can
or
be
just say no completely.
Or can say no. Incredibly difficult to license these items. And our friend Dan Charnas, who's written that amazing book about Jay Dilla, we've had him on the show a couple times, wrote a great column about copyright law is still lagging behind in terms of being able to deal with the whole idea of digital licensing of tracks, of music. Well, basically, the whole foundation of hip-hop is still unresolved because of the sampling issue.
Imagine if... you know, the model for the Mona Lisa would not give her permission for Da Vinci to show that painting, right? Well, I mean, that's what we're really talking about here. Whoever it was, if they said no, the world would be deprived of a masterpiece, and that's the equivalent of what we were talking about with De La Soul. All I know is now it's available. We're all glad that it's available. It's a shame it coincides with Trugoy's death. But beyond the significance of the business end of it, we just love this record. We want to dive deep as we do for Classic Album Dissection. So let's jump in.
This album came out in 1989, 3 Feet High and Rising by De La Soul. Three kids from Long Island with another kid from Long Island who was a little bit older, Prince Paul, the producer. Mm-hmm. A lot of people talk about this with reverence, this period in hip-hop, the golden age of hip-hop. I've heard that referred to more than once.
Oh, and not just people. The likes of Chuck D, Afrika Bambaataa, everybody pays homage to this record.
As a music fan, it was an incredible time. I remember collecting the first 12-inch singles from hip-hop in the late 70s, early 80s, and thinking, this is incredible stuff. It reminded me a lot of punk rock. What we saw was a rapid evolution of hip-hop in the next 5 years.
Just clap your hands, everybody. Everybody, clap your hands.
Just clap your hands, everybody.
Make a clap to this.
Into a more sophisticated art form based on sampling. It's important to note that the idea of sampling, it was still a relatively new art form, and you started to see producers working with this idea of pulling little bits and pieces of music from a huge variety of recordings, recontextualizing them, and making them into something new.
Funky.
So when you think about something like Public Enemies, It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back, or Ultramagnetic MC's Critical Beatdown, or the Jungle Brothers was Straight Out of the Jungle.
Or Beastie Boys' Boutique.
Paul's Boutique, which came out right around the same time.
They were just wrapping up the Beasties' Boutique when they first heard De La Soul's 3 Feet High and Rising. It almost said, like, why are we going to bother to finish this?
Yeah, their whole reaction was, our record isn't good enough. It doesn't match up to this one. So this record was held in high reverence because it was an artful hip-hop record. It was self-consciously artful in the way it used these samples and the way it put these samples together. So what we saw was a flowering of this art form with 3 Feet High and Rising at the very center of it. The whole discussion about hip-hop seemed to change back then. It was this upstart music that wasn't going to last to something that had real staying power, that had a sense of these records are going to be played 50 years from now and people are going to respect them. But as you said, because of the way sampling has been viewed legally,
That whole idea is thrown into question. There's a large issue here. Can a record like 3 Feet High and Rising even be made anymore
because
of the copyright
laws? We'll get
to
the whole sample controversy, but let's introduce these fellas first. They all came from around the town of Amityville, home of the Amityville Horror on Long Island. You remember that?
Yep.
You know, Prince Paul, real name Paul Houston, is a DJ for an influential hip-hop group, Stetsasonic. Mm-hmm. He's producer, he's the DJ, he's one of the driving forces.
I got a girl named Sally, and she don't squall or eat pork with a spoon or fork, but I heard that some people don't like the way Sally walks.
And then he meets, through a mutual middle school music teacher, Pacemaster Mace, Vincent Lamont Mason, who's going to become the DJ for De La Soul. He begins, Mace, working with Stetsasonic, and then introduces Paul to his pals. We have Trugoy the Dove, David Jude Jolicoeur.
My name happens to be Trugoy the Dove. Trugoy is yogurt backwards. Yogurt, I enjoy to eat yogurt. I mean, I eat it a lot.
And Pasdnus, Kelvin Mercer.
I'm Pasdnus. You can call me Pas. Pas is backwards for sop, and Danus is backwards for sound. Sop, sound.
If you're getting a sense of high school playfulness here, mm-hmm. I'm glad. These kids were all in high school. Paul said, I met them. They were nerds. I was a nerd. We were all nerds. Paul's a little bit older. He had accomplished a lot with Stetsasonic, a lot being relative. Hip-hop was being born. He'd made an impact in this small but burgeoning music scene. They record a single, essentially on a cassette in the basement, Plug Tunin', and it winds up in the hands of several labels who begin fighting for it.
Service, prerogative, praise positively, I'm acquitted. Enemies publicly shame my utility. After the battle, then victims, I'm with it. Simply sue, well moved. Vinyl like rude, transistors are never more shown with life. Wind vocal flow brings it all down in ruins. Due to a clue of a naughty noise called Plug Tune.
De La Soul, in a decision that will have ramifications, decide to sign with Tommy Boy, small but extremely hip label on the hip-hop scene at that point in the late 80s, mainly because Tommy Boy showed the most enthusiasm for them. But business-wise, they didn't quite have their act together. These guys begin recording in the spring of 89. They spend a couple of weeks, and it is essentially a party. All three of them have given interviews, plus Paul, saying, you know, they would walk in each day with a stack of albums under their arms.
Mm-hmm.
These were not albums they went out and crate dug for. These were albums their parents owned, right?
Right. Here's Trugoy back in 1989 talking about the different styles of music they each grew up listening to.
My background influence was my parents listened to a lot of old Western, some jazz, some reggae. May's parents listened to a lot of calypso and a lot of R&B. And Pa's parents listened to a lot of jazz.
And some of them, you know, look at the list. Otis Redding, the Barqués, Steely Dan's, Asia, Johnny Cash. The title, 3 Feet High and Rising, comes from one of the guys found Dad had an album by Johnny Cash, 5 Feet High and Rising. They said, oh, there's three of us. Let's take that.
Cows and water up past her knees, 3 feet high and rising. How high's the water, mama? 4 feet high and rising. How high's the water, papa?
Hall & Oates, Liberace, Billy Joel, Kraftwerk, a snippet of New York Mayor Fiorello LaGuardia reading the comics, as he famously did over the radio, and a recording of How to Speak French.
Mm-hmm.
Right? All of this and more, so much more, winds up on 3 Feet High and Rising. And then they come up with this thematic link which I'll let you take over. Because, you know, right now, I think the idea of skits in hip-hop, we have long gotten sick of them.
Right.
But nobody had done it.
Well, it starts here, you know. And it was Prince Paul's idea to you know, put together these little interstitial pieces into this recording of these wildly diverse pieces of music. You know, let's do a game show, boys.
Hey, all you kids out there. Welcome to 3 Feet High and Rising. I'm going to ask an amount of 4 questions, and you'll try to answer them correctly. Now, you out there in the audience can answer along with them. How many feathers are on a Purdue chicken? How many fibers are intertwined in a shredded wheat biscuit? What does touche et lele poo mean? How many times did the Batmobile catch a flat? Now that we know the questions, we'll let the contestants think them over, and we'll return right after these messages.
How many flat tires did the Batmobile get?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they're just goofing around. You get the sense of friends goofing around for the mic. You know, like when kids first get a microphone, that's the story of everybody here in public radio. They first get a microphone and a recorder, and they make their own radio plays.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it sounds like De La Soul. You know, barely out of high school, they're all doing.
They needed to separate themselves. They understood that there was so much great stuff already happening out there that it was pointless to make another hip-hop record that sounded like anything else that was already out there, because there was classics coming out almost every month, it seemed like, at that time. So they went far afield, and Prince Paul goes, I can work with these guys. I mean, he was the most experienced of the group. He recognized somebody that was creating their own lane. As soon as he heard that first demo for Plug Tunin', he was like, these guys are onto something different. I want to work with them. You know, and Trugoy, on that particular track, talks about the first time around, you didn't quite understand our new style of speak.
The first time around, you didn't quite understand our new style of speak.
Don't worry, we can fix that right now.
So why don't you all just grab your bag,
come on board, hoist the anchor, we'll be off.
They were self-consciously coming up with a new language. I mean, they were quoting their version of street slang on this record. They were coming up with their own phrases, their own way of turning words around. So it was a very self-conscious effort to make an artful album that was different than everything else out there. You know, you think about the way that Plug Tunin' was put together from a standpoint of the recording. You know, they went deep. There's a doo-wop record that very few people knew about as sort of a basis for that record. There was this sort of chaotic, playful, abstract, subversive humor to the whole thing.
Answering any offer service, prerogative, praise positively, I'm acquitted. Enemies publicly shame my utility after the battle. Then
let's talk about some of the standout tracks on 3 Feet High and Rising.
What to do when sucker lunatics start digging and chewing? They don't know that the soul don't go for that. Potholes in my lawn, and that goes for my rhyme.
The one of the early tracks, Potholes in My Lawn. Think about that.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
surrealism of that image. You're in the concrete jungle. There are no lawns, only potholes, you know? This is what they're writing about. And there's a yodeling loop in the middle of that
there
song.
Is a yodeling
apropos
loop.
Of nothing other than the fact that it's just funny. It's surreal.
Which leaves my lawn with lawn shoe. I think I better plant traces to give clues. Or better yet, call 911. And when they get here, I inform them I'm the plug one of the plug cheer and let them realize the reason for concern of the soul. Because we've come down with a case of potholes.
The track was about the jealousy of the neighbors. These guys were doing something, and their success spawned jealousy. So this is a battle rhyme, but it's a battle rhyme that didn't sound like anybody else's battle rhyme at the time.
Look,
totally original.
I think the key to understanding De La Soul is they were not afraid to be nerds.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you'd have to wait another 30 years for somebody like Lupe Fiasco to come forward, or very early Kanye West, to take pride in their nerddom and to not be posing. De La Soul got a lot of crap for it right from the beginning from towering figures like KRS-One. Allen of Boogie Down Productions. There was a connection there with Stetsasonic. You know, what is this hippie crap? The Daisy Age is what De La Soul proclaimed. The inner sound, y'all, right? But they were kids, Greg. What about the magic number? You know, they grew up with a bowl of sugary cereal in front of the television watching Schoolhouse Rocks.
Right.
And, you know, three is a magic number is one of the best of the mathematic, arithmetic Schoolhouse Rock songs.
A man and a woman had a little baby. Yes, they did. They had three in the family. That's a magic number.
And they're happily sampling it. I don't think they're doing it as shtick. I think they're doing it as, this is where we come from.
Yeah, this is who we are.
This is who we are.
Three, that's a magic number. Yes,
three.
It is. It's the magic number.
Three.
Somewhere in this hip-hop soul community was born three, Mace Dub and me, and that's a magic number.
What does it all mean?
Difficult preaching is posthumous pleasure. Pleasure in preaching starts in the heart. Something that stimulates the music in a measure. Measure in the music, racing three parts. Casually see, but don't do like the soul. Cause seeing and doing are actions for monkeys. Doing hip hop, hustle, no rock and roll. Unless your name's Bruce.
You know, even the Jennifer Taught Me is sort of a, it's built on this whole cliche, you know, the schoolboy crush and I'm gonna seduce the prettiest girl in the school.
Oh, breakfast, broken fast. She was in my English class. Asked for notes, rocked my boat. Jennifer, oh, Jenny, lost her favorite penny. So I gave her a dollar. She kissed me
and I hollered.
But he's not cool, because Jennifer, at the end of the interlude, moves on. She's dumped this guy already, realized he's not cool enough for me, and they're just kind of like, okay, you know.
Yeah, right.
I had my moment in the sun, and now it's over. My 15 minutes of fame are up. Jennifer doesn't want me anymore. And then there's that ridiculous, but nonetheless, apropos chopsticks interlude, the Liberace chopstick interlude in the middle of that song, you know, that just kind of breaks everything up. And you go, what? Where did that come from?
Listen.
Hey, look at little Darwin. Look at him go. Look at him go.
At the same time, though, it needs to be pointed out that these guys were smart. It wasn't just all jokes. It wasn't all about, let's talk about our misadventures as high school nerds. When you think about a track like Tread Water, just look at the lyric sheet alone. You don't even need music to sort of get the idea that this is an elaborate fable they are creating here. It's not a tossed-off piece of work. It's really a fable about ecological disaster.
I was walking on the water when I saw a crocodile. He had daisies in his hat, so I stopped him for a while. He delivered me a message, a massage to soothe my stage. What it was more than plug, a dosage more than Daisy Age.
You've got this whole idea of a talking fish, you know, in the bathtub.
Yeah.
And you've got the talking crocodile with daisies in his hat on Dove's journey across the river. And the monkey who's talking at the end of the record is a fan saying, you know, you've uplifted me with this record. And he advises Pastanus to stay the course. Don't be swayed by what people say you are. Be who you are. It was almost like they were advising themselves that, you know, people are going to misinterpret this hippie thing, this Daisy Age thing, and they're going to cast us as a bunch of softies and outsiders and people who don't know what they're doing, that don't belong in hip-hop. And he says, you know what? Don't listen to them. Be who you are.
Well, that's exactly what happens. I wanted to mention one more song before we get to the sad denouement of this record. You know, they sample Hall & Oates' I Can't Go For That.
Yeah.
And in De La Soul's hands, it becomes Say No Go.
So bear my witness. Blind like birds of a feather, dressed like pleather. You don't wanna wear it.
which is anti-drug, right? One of the least cool things that's happening in hip-hop at that time. We have not yet, or we're just about to have, the explosion of West Coast gangster rap. You know, innumerable tales about drug dealing. We've had some of that at that point in New York. You know, it's going to become the endless trope in hip-hop forever. After a short break, we'll dig into the story of the breakout hit from 3 Feet High and Rising, Me, Myself, and I, and we'll explore how the album's 200 samples set the stage for a decades-long battle that impacted the sound of hip-hop for years to come. Plus, later in the show, we'll hear from some of you, our listeners. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions. Remember in 2018 when Border Patrol separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents, deported those parents back to their home countries, and kept the kids in the United States? Believe it or not, 6 years later, there are still hundreds of families who have not yet been reunited.
Though we as a community may feel hopeless at times, we recently learned about an organization called Al Otro Lado, which works to reunify families. They provide holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the U.S. and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm reduction-based practice.
Since 2018, they've reunited over 100 refugee families ripped apart by the zero-tolerance policy of the previous administration. Once reunited, Al Otro Lado helps each family find legal representation, housing, and the counseling they need in order to heal and get back on their feet.
Imagine having your child ripped from your arms and never knowing when you would see them again. We can't let family separations go on. If you're like us and believe that all families belong together, then join us supporting Al Otro Lado and donate today.
You can find the link to donate to Al Otro Lado in the description of this episode, or go to gum.fm/charity and donate today. That's gum.fm/charity.
You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in-person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website, elotrolado.org/volunteer.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Now you tease my plug one style and my plug one spectacle. You say plug one and two are hippies, nowhere, not just pure plug four. Plug always pushing that we formed an image, there's no need to lie. When it comes to being plug one, it's just me, myself, and I. It's just me, myself, and I. It's just me, myself, and I.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot here with Jim DeRogatis. This week, we're digging into the history of 3 Feet High and Rising, the classic 1989 album by hip-hop trio De La Soul. The breakout hit from that album was Me, Myself, and I, a song built on 6 samples. It's also a song that almost didn't happen. They'd finished the album, they turned it into Tommy Boy, and Tommy Boy does the record company cliche, we don't hear a single.
Right.
Give us something we can play on radio. They go back in the studio. The principal takes his Parliament sample, not just Knee Deep. And builds this incredible track underneath Me, Myself, and I.
Mirror, mirror on the wall. Tell me, mirror, what is wrong? Can it be my daylight clothes or is it just my daylight soul? What I do ain't make-believe. People say I sit and try, but when it comes to being daylight, it's just me, myself, and I.
They talk about this idea of being played by the label.
Yeah.
And being played by, you know, being pigeonholed
because of the way a particular record sounds. Style is surely our own thing, not the false disguise of showbiz.
My name happens to be Trugoy the Dove. We don't dress with the gold chains and the Tazelle glasses and the Kango hats and all that stuff, the sneakers. We don't do all of that. We just, you know, choose to be ourselves.
It's just me, myself, and I.
We now see the world and the record companies for what they are.
Right.
We're moving on.
We're moving on.
That sort of sets the stage for the next record, which was a complete 180. They say it right in that track.
Yeah.
It's just me, myself, and I. Now you tease my plug one style and my plug one spectacle. You say plug one and two are hippies, nowhere, not just pure plug four. Always pushing that we formed an image, there's no need to lie. When it comes to being plug one, it's just me, myself, and I.
That song alone has six samples. It's got Not Just Knee Deep by Funkadelic. It's got Funky Worm by the Ohio Players.
Say it now.
Yes.
Rapper Dapper Snapper,
yeah,
by Edwin Birdsong. Gonna Make You Mine by Loose Ends. And the original Human Beatbox by Dougie Fresh.
Right.
All of that in one song, over 200 samples on this record. The problem is only 60 were cleared. What does that mean? This was new turf at this point. The rules for hip-hop and for sampling were being written. De La Soul have subsequently said in many interviews, and I do not believe it's justification after the fact, that they just assumed the record company was going to handle this.
Right.
And the record company, Tommy Boy, did handle some of it. But they missed quite a few, including a little snippet of a song, You Showed Me, by The Turtles.
À midi.
Quelle heure est-il?
Il est midi.
C'est l'heure de déjeuner.
Qu'est-ce qu'il y a à manger?
Des saucisses. Sans doute.
I think the Turtles were one of the mediocre wannabe Beatles,
yeah,
kind of bands of the mid-60s. De La Soul took 12 seconds of it and looped it for a 66-second track under the How to Speak French recording,
yeah,
right? You know, and the Turtles sued. And sued with a vehemence, you know, I think unwarranted. They were looking for $2.5 million,
yeah,
for this 12 seconds of sound. You got to remember, these weren't just clueless white guy wannabe Beatles. Howard Kalin and Mark Volman, the leaders of the Turtles, went on to play for years with Frank Zappa.
Yeah.
You think if anybody would have appreciated freakiness,
mm-hmm,
it would have been Kalin,
right,
and Volman. Anyway, you know, what's more, Zappa would include bits of Edgar Varese,
mm-hmm,
in his music, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
sure,
he's quoting everything from Schoenberg,
mm-hmm,
to Louie Louie. You know, I never understood that. You know, it effectively has been a horrible legacy for this record ever since. The contract was also very narrow-minded. You and I have written books,
mm,
right? Our book contracts say, you know, paper rights, audio rights, you know, Kindle rights, and any form that may ever be invented, right? You know, someday people are going to have a USB port in their neck, and they'll just,
right,
you know, stick that in. You know, how Tommy Boy did not do that. And then Tommy Boy is later subsumed by Warner Brothers Records.
Mm-hmm.
None of these companies have ever wanted to go back and do the hassle of paying for,
right,
these samples.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, look, for shame on the artists, really, you know, like the Turtles, for making such a big stink, you know, like, why can't they take a cut?
It's this kind of completely myopic, legalistic viewpoint of what sampling is. Everybody says it's stealing. Well, you know, if you borrow a blues riff, you know, there's one blues song, right?
Right.
And 8 million blues men made a variation on that one blues song. And nobody sued them. You know, you go through the history of pop music, everyone borrows or steals from somebody else. Sampling is just a way of recontextualizing the past and making it relevant for a new piece of music. You know, when you think about an artist like, and Prince Paul is an artist in the way he used these samples, it's ridiculous to think that somebody would sue them for millions of dollars for appropriating a few seconds of a record that no one has thought about for three decades.
And the group had its own philosophy on what it was doing with the samples. Here's the album's producer, Prince Paul, followed by De La Soul's Trugoy the Dove and Mace, talking about the art of sampling in 1989.
If you have a creative mind, you could basically use anything. For example, I could take a record such as a basic Disneyland Mickey Mouse record, for example. Now, people may not believe it, but if you look at these old records, you could find things like drum beats on them. It's hard to believe, though.
When we sample, we don't just, you know, just sample it and just lay it and loop it. We can turn it backwards, make the end the beginning, chop it up and make it sound like a totally new, different instrument being played.
It's not actually stealing. It's like bringing back the old songs, making the old songs new again, making people like it, you know, even more.
You know, you listen to the De La Soul 66 seconds, you know, and it's like it's unrecognizable. The other big case was Biz Markie got sued by Gilbert O'Sullivan for sampling similarly a couple of seconds of Alone Again Naturally.
Wait a little while from now, if I'm not feeling any less sound.
I was on my way to 125th. I saw this Def bench, yo, that's my man Cliff. As I flagged him down, he pulled to the side. At this moment, I had to swallow my pride.
The judge was so clueless, not only about this nascent, burgeoning hip-hop culture. There's a wonderful piece that Robert Christgau has written about that trial. Look it up online. The judge had to ask several times for the court to define for him what R&B was.
Right.
He didn't understand. So you have this English wannabe, you know, blue-eyed soul singer, has this hit. The difference was Biz Markie knew it had to be cleared, and Gilbert O'Sullivan had denied permission, and he went ahead and did it anyway.
Right.
You know, but De La Soul honestly thought they'd been cleared, you know, that somebody at the company store was taking care of them. And I just think it's one of the greatest tragedies in the history of music that everybody can't immediately rush to Spotify and listen to this album on repeat for the next 3 weeks.
Well, it's important to note that in the time, that there was still a gray area here about what how to use sampling and how what the licensing rules really were. Because anybody could make up any number they want and say, okay, I'll let you use 4 seconds of my record, but you have to pay X amount of dollars. And they could just make up a figure.
Yeah.
Or not care. And there was sort of this gray area for that approach to making hip-hop records at the time. I mean, the licensing rules are so stringent. There has been precedent set in these court proceedings that to make a record like this now would be practically impossible.
This one's about the KOs, the knockouts out there who's holding my blood.
Hold up.
Wait a minute.
Now just wait. We're going to talk about Buddy on this plate.
But in a way, it became a challenge to the artists who followed, because I think De La Soul's legacy is alive and well.
Yeah.
I hear it in artists like The Social Experiment, Chance the Rapper's backing group, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Nate Fox and Nico Siegel.
Don't you look up to me, don't trust a word I say. Don't you end up like me, if you learn one thing today.
I hear it certainly in a lot of what Common went on to do, that wonderful Electric Circus record.
The lives I affected, connect the control. With me in your basement, your mama got blow. I provide the vibe to keep the strippers on pose. To me, the black spirit is a glorious toe. From a school, this old bone. So I rock gold and platinum. Some cats I hold notes to cast for them. On streets I rap with them, in ghettos I blast with them. Mash with them at the party and all. Be the universal language that's embodied and all. With the Billie Holiday, Bob Marley and y'all. Y'all feel most high.
Wherever there's ambition, Frank Ocean, you know, I've heard it, you know.
The best song wasn't the single, but you weren't either.
living in Ladera Heights, the Black Beverly Hills, domesticated paradise, palm trees and pools. The water's blue, swallow the pill, keeping it surreal. Whatever you like. Whatever
refusing to color good in the lines and wanting to reach out far and wide. But what they've had to do is partner with musicians.
Right.
Right. What you can do is play a riff.
Right.
You know, if you are recording a riff instead of sampling a riff.
Or in effect, create your own sample on a keyboard or a synthesizer or whatever, and then sample that, you know, which is still a way of doing it, you know.
But, we should explain for listeners, because I think still a lot of people do not understand. Over 200 samples on this record, a similar number, even more astronomical on It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back by Public Enemy, similar on Paul's Boutique, right? I'm sorry. We can give you those couple of hundred records and a sampler and show you how to use it. You are not going to accomplish what the Bomb Squad or Prince Paul did or the Dust Brothers with the...
Well, it's so dense. It's an art.
It's a true talent. Yeah. I don't think people understand. You know, people think sampling and they think about what, you know, that Puff Daddy song where he steals half the Sting song.
Yeah.
Pain I feel, give anything to hear half your breath. I know you're still living your life after death.
That's not what these artists were doing.
I also think we have here the roots of whatever you want to call it, indie rap. Certainly part of the emerging subculture in New York of the Native Tongues movement, you know, the Tribe Called Quest. Jungle Brothers, Queen Latifah, Black Sheep.
MC Light.
De La Soul was right in the middle of that. Yeah, absolutely. And when you think about the idea that rap, you didn't have to be hard or nasty, you know, or street to connect. You could be positive, smart, abstract, nerdy, funny.
Because I gotta like that. Because I gotta like that.
Like how?
Like that.
You know, you could be yourself. You could be anything you wanted to be, as long as you were creative. So you get Mos Def, you get Talib Kweli.
Ooh, yeah, baby girl, look at you. Coming on the block looking fresh and brand new. Ooh, head wrap cover your head too. Pretty feet picking through open toes.
You get Common. You get, you know, the whole Chicago sound from Chance the Rapper back to Lupe Fiasco.
So he was banished to the park. Started in the morning, one stopped after dark. Yeah, when they said it's getting late in here. So I'm sorry, young man, there's no skating here. And so we kicked.
Yeah. You know, think about Kanye, you know, the way he used sampling, the way he was able to be himself on his early records.
They take me to the back and pat me, asking me about some khakis, but let some black people walk in. I bet you they show off they token black. Oh, now they love Kanye. Let's put them all in the front of the store. So I'm on break next to the no smoking sign with them.
You think about the Def Chucks record label under LP.
Male, dark hair, dark eyes, long walks through a park, and a lot of them lies. I'm a little bit jaded by a lot of what I see. So
again, those are the children of 3 Feet High and Rising, and it goes on and on.
I want to be picked up, held tight, and kissed, but things like this don't happen to dudes like me, because I'm more Coldplay than I am iced tea. They say that good girls love bad guys, and that might be, but a bad girl with a good guy, that's unlikely.
That wraps up our discussion of De La Soul's album 3 Feet High and Rising, and now we want to hear from you. Leave us a voice message on soundopinions.org with your thoughts, like these listeners did.
New messages.
We are the crowd. We could come out.
Hi, Sound Opinions. Dedicated listener, Dylan here. I just wanted to drop my two cents real quick about my favorite song regarding photography. It has to be Lady Gaga's Paparazzi, likening loving obsession with someone as a predatory paparazzi. I think it's such a genius, tongue-in-cheek representation of, you know, Lady Gaga's personality, and as well, she was at that time the creative director of Polaroid. Rock and roll.
Thinking of songs about pictures, that Richard Buckner song, Lil Wallet Picture, from Devotion and Doubt album, is amazing.
Underspent and too young to, I stumbled onto a picture of you. You wild, bitter tale, all cherry oak and tears as the branches look in. The summer is done.
His delivery, the quality of his voice, the feel that he puts into it, and also just the imagery he paints with really what sounds like a poem is really beautiful. I've always loved that song.
Hand me that little wallet picture in 1985 one more time.
Hi, this is Tom from New York. In terms of great songs about photographs, I'd like to nominate Let Me Take Your Photo by The Speedies, a great indie New York act from the 80s, especially because one of the members, Gregory Crutzen, went on to a terrific career as a very noted art photographer himself. Thank you.
Let me take your photo.
Yes, on the subject of songs about pictures, I can't help but think of The Cure's Pictures of You.
I've been living so long with my pictures of you that I almost believe that the pictures are all I can feel.
It's so beautiful. It's so tragic. It almost makes me cry every time I hear it.
No more messages.
Thank you to our listeners for sharing their opinions with us. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this program belong solely to Sound Opinions and not necessarily to Columbia College Chicago or our sponsors. Thanks, as always, to our Patreon supporters. Sound Opinions is produced by Andrew Gill, Alex Claiborne, and our associate producer, Sol Delgadillo. Our Columbia College intern is Lauren Holt, and our social media consultant is Katie Cott.
I don't know.